Welcome to the 216th episode of the Crack Die Podcast.
Gorsh!
Call back to you guys weren't there. Sorry, this was pre
inside joke.
Yeah,
that's what people love to hear. One side of an inside joke.
Also, please don't sue us, Disney. So we did it. We finished another book.
Holy shit.
Wow.
Goddamn.
And who says people don't read anymore?
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Despite our best efforts, we made it through.
Yeah. Despite my best efforts, you guys made it through.
Oh, we were aware.
Outside of high school, when I didn't really have to have a job or anything like that, I think this is the longest campaign I've ever been a part of. I think the only game that I've been in that may have been a little longer was the old school World of Darkness LARP, but LARPs and tabletop games feel, I mean, they're in two separate categories of gaming. So I think this is my longest tabletop game I've ever been a part of. So first off, for everyone.
Mm-hmm. You're welcome, Sean.
Thanks everybody listening.
Thanks to everyone for listening and thanks for everyone for playing. I hope you guys are having as much fun as I am.
Yes, absolutely. We are.
Sorry. Yeah, I don't think we all intended on the crickets there. Yes, sorry.
Yes, we're having fun.
All right. I'm going to see myself out and cry.
No,
excuse me. Shut the fuck.
No, we've been having a great time.
This is definitely a lot of fun. And I will agree, this is also my longest campaign of any sort. Yeah, I think we were just talking about this last night. Right, Matt?
I believe so, yeah. Sorry, I was lost in my own head about thinking about LARPing. Because so many times in LARPing, like, you spend 3 hours doing fucking nothing. Like, you.
Yeah, hurry up and wait.
Yeah, there's just shit happening. You're just like, okay, I'm not really involved in any of this. I'll just sit over here.
That's an over there problem.
I'll make my own fun.
That's why I love doing, like, crafting classes in LARPs, because I just get to, like, bring a bunch of random shit and, like, make tea for a weekend.
That is actually awesome, yes.
I really want to do the Shire Town shindig soon, because it's just, let's be hobbits for a weekend. And that sounds fucking amazing.
Send links, please.
Will do, will do.
I think they're one of the classes of hobbits. It's like at the end of the party, you can scramble and everyone in your family just disappears so you don't have to clean up.
I think that is actually a thing, yeah. Anyway, Pathfinder.
Yeah. So like we've done for the other books, we've asked everyone to write in questions that you have, and you have, so thank you. There are people listening to us and we appreciate that. We'll go through, we'll answer them, then I'll answer any questions that I can from the players that I can, Matt.
All right.
So yeah, Haya, you have those questions, I believe, right?
I do. And we have a varied selection this time. So very first, our dear friend Cassandra, who is at Cass Darkly on Blue Sky Social. I think she is the only person who has given us socials. So please go follow her. She is an incredible human being. And she has a whole bunch of questions for us.
Uh-oh.
Yep.
Cass, thank you so much for your interaction.
Thanks, Cass.
Yeah, seriously. So her first question is, what NPC would you like to see make a return to the campaign before the end? Whether it be an enemy you have unresolved business with or a friend your character would like to check in on, it would be great to see some of those threads reemerge and be woven in. Yeah, Sean.
Yeah, hang on. Let me just grab my pen and paper here. So who would you all like to see again?
Warble.
Yeah, more Warble. Yeah, more
Warble. Okay, Warble will definitely be back.
Yeah, she's usually at the Citadel.
I can guarantee you that.
1,000 Bones would be a really fun one for me. I don't know about you. Just me? All right.
We do have that whole thread all the way back to book one. With a certain someone who may or may not have died under mysterious circumstances and been brought back? Question mark? In like cutscenes added by Sean?
I was gonna say the same. I think those trio, Foz, Alec, and the Green-Eyed Man, who we later found out was Aurelius. I would love to see more of them since they've been kind of quiet all book, which is very disconcerting.
I mean, we kind of have been hopping all over Galarian, so I imagine we're hard to pin down.
That's true. Damn it, where'd they go next?
No, I'm not spoiling anything, trust me, but I have shards of paper hidden around the house, so Christine can't find them. With like book one, this is what's happening with them. Book two, this is what's happening with them. Book three, book four, book five, book six.
Oh, this is news to me. So now I'm going to start looking.
So they are working in the background. I have been making rolls and doing things too.
Interesting.
They're not gone. I have not forgotten them. Trust me. I have notes written everywhere. They're on the back of Taco Bell bags that I've ripped up in places.
Jesus, no wonder the house smells like it does.
You thought it was a Crunchwrap Supreme. It is your doom!
Hey, it's not my story. I just want to see how it goes.
It's your colon's doom with the Crunchwrap Supreme.
Oh, no.
Hang on, I'm writing a new goblin.
Is that to go with all your friends' characters?
Yes. Anyone else?
I don't know. Maybe, I want to say her name's Lady Delacorte, but like the elven woman who was the head of the girls' school.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Assassins.
Delacorte sounds about right. Yeah.
Yes, she was cool.
Lady Decor. Yes, that is correct. She ran the all-girls spy school in book 3. I think we can make that happen.
And what was the name of the, I think it was like a gnome or a halfling who was like doing all the bellflower stuff. There was a lot going on in that city.
Yeah, that city. So one thing I will admit, I'm not the strongest writer in the world, but what I love about these adventure paths is that they give you so many threads that don't actually ever come back up. And you just need to, like, do your own creation, which is part of the fun. I get it. I get it. But yeah, I'm stalling looking for her name in all. Noli. Noli. It was Noli Peltry. I will put Noli down as well.
I have to say, like, Baldur's Gate 3 has spoiled me for certain dumb things, like the epilogue, where you just kind of, like, get to go and, like, see all your friends again after you save the world.
Absolutely.
Like, this would be a cute little reunion thing.
Yeah, I can't wait to see who's left after our evil run.
Yeah, that embrace dirge.
Anything from book 2? Anyone from book 2 that you guys are thinking about? I'm just looking at the books now.
We don't talk about book 2.
I do want to know if bisexual elves have stayed together.
Yes.
That was like a big thing, was like getting her, the chief, to hook up with the guy he wanted to hook up with after his wife died. And daughter's just like, I just want him to be happy. We killed Gilderoy Lockhart, right?
Oh, that's right, Gilderoy.
I don't think that wasn't actually his name, but like he was just that kind of guy.
Gerhard Pentliger. That is one of those characters that sticks in your brain forever.
Yes.
Gerhard Pentergast.
You know what? I want to see what became of him.
Didn't we like literally tie him to a raft and like shove him into the river?
Just literally set it down for her.
Yes. He'll be fine. So the next question from Cass is, what is the main selling point of your PC's action figure? You know, like Karate Chop Action or Spits Real Sparks.
Oh, that's a good question.
So 80s toys.
Yes.
Ooh, that is a good question.
I can't say mine.
I think it oozes that she's anatomically correct.
Yeah. Who doesn't have an action figure? She has a blow-up doll.
Yes.
I kind of feel like mine would come in a pack with Brianna, like as part of like the backpack, you'd snap it in.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Brianna's special feature comes with knife sword.
Two in one.
Or it could be like those action figures where like you get pieces of them in other people's action figures. You have to buy all 4 to get the knife sword figure, which then snaps into Brianna's back or something.
Perfect.
What's with this little green cylinder? Where does that go?
That goes to
No, it's knife sword.
What would Twin Talons be?
Twin Talon, like there's a button you push in his back and his tattoos glow.
Oh, that's cool.
Ooh.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
I was going to say Twin Talons figure is invisible, but that would be just like an empty blister pack.
Right next to the air guitars.
Yeah.
But no, I think the glowing tattoos would be cool.
Absolutely.
I think that'd be great, yeah.
I'm trying to think of what Serene's would be.
Comes with exploding bombs. She comes, what are those things where you like snap on the ground?
Yeah, like glow sticks, or like she comes with like a chemistry set, like a little mini chemistry kit.
Yeah.
Are you talking about the little poppers that you throw on the ground?
Yes, yes. Comes with poppers or something.
I just figured you lick her and she's got like LSD on her. Oh. She's like a frog.
Hallucinogenic.
I don't know. When I think alchemists, I think of hallucinogens.
I also feel like there would be a button on the back of the arm, and the arm would move up and down, so like you could put a little popper in it, and it throws it.
Ooh.
There you go.
Yeah, and she comes with her little chemistry set.
What about Brianna?
Brianna's arm moves up and she shield blocks. That's her feature. And she comes with a knife sword.
I also feel like knife sword would have accessories that have magnets in it. So when you put them down near the other toys, they would be sucked towards the magnets.
Yes.
Yes.
That would be funny if all of them were negatively charged. And we're like, why would all of our action figures like repel from each other until you get the knife sword action figure, which has a positively charged magnet and just like sucks them all in.
I think all of my monsters would just show up and then fall apart. You know, like there's a button on the back that you push and it just they just fall apart.
You know what? That makes sense.
Reminds me of the, okay, I'm going to date myself here, but in the mid 90s, the Crash Test Dummies had a TV show.
Oh God, so old. Oh.
I remember that.
And they had these toys that you would like, you would literally crash them into each other and they'd fall apart and you get to rebuild them.
Oh, I think I saw ads for that. I was born in 1991, so like mid-90s is like just when my memory is kicking in.
As someone who's born prior to 1991, but a other side of the world, yeah, that doesn't sound familiar. Sorry.
That's right. I'm the baby, aren't I?
As someone born in the U.S., it doesn't sound familiar to me either. Don't feel bad. I was not part of that particular thing. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And yes, Christine, you are the baby.
That's so weird to me.
Followed by, I think, Heidi?
Yep, 89.
Then me, then I don't know what happens.
Then Sean, then me, then Rob.
Yeah.
Anyway, happy birthday to all of us for whatever reason.
We're all old. We're just calling. I'm just the youngest of the olds. So.
Yeah, hang on. I got to rub some Bengay on my back and get my walker as I get back to the computer here.
Oh, my God. I was just thinking the same thing. But anyway, next question. What is one thing you'd like to see your character accomplish before the end of the adventure path?
Reach level 20.
Survive.
Character. Yeah, survive is a good one.
Can I just say, I think going back to Brianna's toy character, I think a really good action toy thing for her would be that, like, in one of the episodes, she talks about having wings. So why not, like, push a button and, like, wings sprout from her back?
You know what? That's what I want.
Okay, we can go back to this new one.
Plus the shield raise. It's the wings come out and the shield goes up.
Yes, yes.
I love it.
You're angelic now. Okay, we can go back to this question. Who wants to see Brianna and Twin Talon get together so bad?
Will they, won't they?
We were on a break.
They were just friends forever. That's really what's happened with them. Like,
Ooh doesn't know that? Maybe she does. I don't know.
I think Ooh has probably been told that and chooses to ignore it.
This is more than likely.
That's true. That is probably true.
I'm trying to think of what I'd want.
Yeah, what would you want?
I mean, she's done a lot more adventuring than she's ever really done before, which is cool for her. But I don't know. I'll have to think about that one. There's going to be like 10 episodes from now. Someone's just going to be like, oh, I know what I want them to do. And it'll be like call back to like the Q&A at the end of book 4.
That's fine. That's totally fine. I know when we met Soraya, she was kind of a recluse up in the mountain.
Yeah, a little bit of like a kind of a hermit. I guess she's kind of like done what would be best for her, which is, I think, like, find a group of people to be around. She's got her friends now, and she likes them.
100%. I think I was trying to thread it in to, like, the between the scenes, especially since we have gotten a lot of Dawn Silver. Is that what it's called now?
Dawn Silver, yeah.
Eventually, I would love, or now between books, I would love Brianna and her brother to finally finish making a set of Dawn Silver armor for her. You know, so I can be faster.
Wait, what is Dawn Silver?
It's Mithril.
We've moved away from copywritten terms that Hasbro can threaten to take away from us.
Is Knife Sword's ultimate goal to find the best napping place?
Oh, I would have thought it was just to break all the laws of physics at once.
A little of both.
Finish remodeling.
I intend to break all the laws of physics in pursuit of the best napping place.
Column A, column B.
You know what? That checks out.
In like Gloomhaven and Frosthaven, you know, all the classes have masteries at the bottom that are very hard to accomplish. I feel like that's Knife Sword's mastery, is break all the laws of physics at once and then take a nap in the same turn.
Sounds right.
I love it.
Make napping a free action. That's what I want to do.
What? Knife Sword's custom spell is compressed time, and he just gets like a full rest in 2 seconds of his turn.
Oh my god, that's an amazing idea. I want that spell.
Oh my god, yes.
Make it happen, guys. Make it happen.
Not knife sword. I want that spell.
I want that spell.
Yeah, right.
Yes. Yes, please. Yes.
6 seconds and you get a full night's rest? Oh, I'm down.
All right, next one. Do folks have more stuff? Matt, how about you? You haven't said anything.
I said level 20. I don't know if there's anything else. I mean, Twin Talon showed up in Breach Hell because Brianna was there. And he's just been kind of along for the ride ever since. So stabbing stuff here and there, you know?
I always thought you guys were part of some kind of sacred order or something.
Really?
Knife Sword just kind of thinks you guys are part of some kind of organization, and he's curious as to when his paycheck's coming.
I'm sorry.
Us too, buddy.
Is all of the loot not enough?
Yeah.
Yeah, honestly.
Remember your staff of ultimate power?
Yeah.
No. I have an object permanence problem. Sorry, no.
Honestly, same. Why I keep forgetting what Brianna has in her character sheets, because
hang on, I gotta go work on my next episode.
And that episode will be behind the paywall.
Are we saying this is a challenge? Like, are we challenging Cass and Heidi to?
I think Ooh's ultimate goal is to write the smuttiest fanfic about Brianna and Toon Talon.
True.
It's been a long time since I've written smutty fanfiction, but like...
No. Because I know Cass, not only would Cass do that, she would knock it out of the park, like, so far.
Ooh.
Ooh.
I've got my own version of friend fiction now. I mean, who does?
Hi, Mom and Dad.
Is Ooh the Tina Belcher of this game?
Absolutely.
Writing the erotic friend fiction?
Abso-fucking-lutely.
Yeah, I think so.
I'm all for it. Oh my gosh.
Okay, next question, please.
Next question. Sean, this one's for you. What are the final boss's weaknesses?
Good question. You have to answer. You can't lie.
Okay. The final boss's weakness is cheese, because I control the final boss and my weakness is cheese.
I can get cheese.
You heard it here, folks. We have to bring a whole hunk of cheese for Dahak. It'll make fondue. It'll be great.
Dahak automatically heats it.
Yes. Oh my god. No, it's just Dahak just making raclette.
Yes.
Oh, I would be here for that.
That would be amazing. The great and powerful Dahak. Would you like some raclette?
It's just like one of those like 1200 pound wheels of Parmesan, and he just like puts it up on a chain and just kind of like breathes fire up at it and lets the melty part strip down, and then like just keeps going until it's gone.
And it encases his enemies in the cheese.
Aw, you had to ruin it.
Don't threaten me with a good time.
Death by cheese. Death by cheese.
I don't think that's a bad thing. I don't know what's happening.
Right? Like, I wouldn't be opposed. There are worse things to die. I don't know, though, because I feel like if it's like hot cheese, like it'll be like melting you. It depends.
Yeah.
These are the thoughts, people. All right. Next question.
When is your character's birthday? Bonus internet points for Galarian time. If you don't have an exact date, what season were they born in?
One time back in the day, my friends and I were playing a game of D&D, and the bad guy turned out to be Kalendar, Master of Time, a wizard. And it was spelled like calendar.
You know what? Checks out.
DC Comics would like to have a word with you.
Oh, no.
Look, they had straight up Calendar Man.
I'll start because I am very much a walking cliche. Brienne would be born on the 10th of Serenith.
I feel like Sarai would somewhere be around like the 18th of Desnus. Like she feels like a springtime May baby.
Mm.
Whose birthday is unclear. She just sprung into existence.
From fire and wind and birth. Sorry, wrong podcast.
Yes.
Also, I have to say something that's been in my head for fucking ever. There happened to be a day when we had the calendar up on Foundry as we were playing, and it came up as the 8th of Lamashan. And then forever after, my brain would only go, la, 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 on the 8th of Lamashan.
I love it.
Just so you know, the game starts in 4719.
Knife Sword was born the fourth day after the 378th dump day on Heap 127 North.
Oh, Jesus. That tracks for goblin math, honestly.
So Twin Talon was probably born like 20th Ferast, 4700.
So, Matt, just fun fact. In 4711, that's when Citadel Altairn was completely abandoned. And 10 years before you were born is when the Scarlet Triad got into the slavery business.
Born in the right time.
4717 is when the Bumble Brashers, or as I call them, the Bramble Brashers, moved into the Citadel. And Absalom outlawed slavery.
Hooray!
Well, so this is kind of a wider view of the world. Since the start of the game, it's only been like 2 years since Absalom outlawed slavery.
Interesting.
And I feel like definitely a year has gone by in game, so it's probably 4720 at this point, so.
We have two more questions from Cass to go through. All right, the next question is, what would your character do for a Klondike bar?
Stab a bitch.
I don't know. Sarah is like, I can make my own and it would be 30 times better, so like not much.
What is a Klondike bar?
Oh, have you ever had that? It's chilled sweet and cream in a chocolate casing. It's quite delicious. Once again, don't go for the mass-produced one. I'll make you one sometime. It'll be delicious. It'll be wonderful.
Brianna's answer.
All of my monsters would kill the players.
Whoa.
The characters versus the players. God, this was drilled into me when I was writing for games. One of the companies is like so stringent about that. They're like, players roll dice. Characters do action. Get it right.
No pressure.
Just means all of those monsters are going to be disappointed.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like, they're ready for a fight, and we're just like, we give up.
Yep.
Why do you guys think I have a bucket of swords behind me?
That's true.
That's Rob in real life, not knife sword.
Yeah, that's not knife sword. That's just Rob. I have a lightsaber. I can hit you with my lightsaber. I have been learning how to properly fence with a lightsaber.
I can sit on people. It caused death.
Death by snooze, not a bad way to go. Just saying.
Yeah.
Rip open time and space.
Checks out.
Go to a grocery store and throw a bunch of them into a bag of holding and then nip back over to the real reality.
So knife sword just exits the game, enters our world. Steals them and goes back to Clary.
Perfect.
No notes.
Checks out. I would eat Soraya's Klondike bar.
That sounds about right.
Checks out.
Checks out.
There you go. Yeah. Yep.
Final question from Cass. What is the player's favorite Pathfinder monster?
Ooh.
I'll go first. So for novelty and also because we run into a very adorable one, in the Twitch game, Absalom in Order, every third Saturday, be there, be square. Rusty the Rust Monster will forever be in my heart.
Oh.
But in terms of cool, there is something I, just out of curiosity, once in a while will poke my nose into the bestiary and be like, oh, that's cool. But there's something called, and forgive me for mispronouncing, is it the Ikorsh? Ikorshe? And I will read you the little text stuff that goes with it. When a necromancer has a need for a versatile agent to serve as a bodyguard and do their bidding in disguise, they build an Ikorsh, a skinless monstrosity filled with putrid alchemical agents covered in pulsing muscle and sinew grafts and imbued with razor-sharp claws. The Ikorsh uses its claws to flay its victim, stripping off skin in seconds. It can then horrifyingly squeeze itself into the stolen skin and impersonate the deceased, which it does to covertly carry out orders or find more victims to expand its collection.
Bet y'all aren't so upset by Jasper now.
This is the alien from Men in Black.
Yes. If its deception is uncovered, it shreds its disguise, bursting forth in terrible skinless form.
Ooh.
Hot.
Right? Terrible.
So for me, my favorite creature is, I actually haven't seen it used in any APs or anything, and it has very sentimental ties to Hawaii, which is where I grew up. And it is the Night Marchers, which is a legend story that I grew up with. And it's from Native Hawaiian lore that they have that exists there, and they're a real thing, but they got put into Pathfinder and the third bestiary, and I absolutely love them for many reasons. I didn't know this until very, very recently, but someone I went to high school with, who is a year behind me, actually works at Paizo, and they are Asian Pacific Islander, and they've had their hands in a lot of bringing like First Nations and Native Hawaiian and an Asian representation into Pathfinder second edition, and they helped a lot on the new books, and I believe they helped with the Night Marchers as well. Then again, the Night Marchers are gargantuan undead spirits, incorporeal. They're really, really cool. Like, if they move, they move through you. They do massive damage. There's never just one. It's always a troop of them. So they're really cool. It's just so great to see something that I grew up knowing the story of and seeing them put into a game and have that representation. When I saw that, I was just very, very excited and touched by it. It's something from home, and I think it's really cool. Oh, they're resistant to all damage except ghost touch.
Oof. I mean, yeah, that sounds about right for what I know of their legend.
I thought you were going to say they were one of those big tropical spiders that are like the size of plates.
Oh, no.
No.
I do not like spiders in any shape or form. Having Renali as an NPC was traumatic.
Oh, that's right, Renali.
Yeah.
Speaking of people, we might want to come back and see what they're up to.
Sorry, Sean, but yes.
No, it's fine. I'm writing notes. I have my pad and paper here.
So I have an answer for this, but I don't remember what the monster is called. But they were a monster that was in the Strange Aeons adventure path in the first book. And they were a creature that basically fed on emotions. So what they did, basically in the adventure path, there was like this courtyard that was kind of covered in mist. You couldn't see very far. And they would swoop down out of the mist and they would pick people up. And they would basically take them up high and they would tickle them as they were doing this. And then they basically would either drop them and then like swoop down with them to like get all that fear, or they would put them on like a high parapet where they were just like stuck on the outside of this building, essentially like on a windowsill, like very, very high up, and then just like drink in all of their panic. And I don't remember what they're called. I feel like they had like a blank face. They had like two sets of arms, one to grab you and the other set would like tickle you. And they were just like really creepy. And I remember running that and the players just being creeped out. It was very effective. They were a very effective monster in that like situation. Of all the monsters that I've, you know, played with over the years, that one still like in the front of my brain.
Yeah. I almost forgot about them as the one that got picked up.
Well, you got picked up. Greg got picked up. Other people got picked up and dropped.
The worst part about all of that is just being tickled.
Well, that's the thing. Like, this thing swoops out of the fog, picks you up. It's tickling you. So not only are you like disoriented, now you've got this weird sensation of being tickled. Yeah, it's just a whole lot of just like sensory overload.
Honestly, though, if they're looking to feed on strong emotion, the horror and revulsion of what is happening, plus I'm being tickled, plus I'm laughing, plus, but oh God, I can't do anything. Like, that's a feast.
Yeah, they were pretty cool. The sick mind that drew them up, like, good for that person. That was an effective monster.
So I kind of have two answers, because I adore cute things and I adore creepy as fuck things. So I think pipe foxes are adorable. Think of like a fox without legs and it's about a foot long. So it's literally just like a little, like if a fox was a snake, but it was still like fuzzy and cute like a fox. And they're like, they're super friendly and like you can have them as familiars and they're just adorable and they're like really shy, but they like to bond with their one person or whatever. Look them up. They're super, super cute. But then there's also something called a skin skitter. I found them because skin kites were some of my favorite creepy things from D&D 3.5. So skin skitters, the description here is, these elusive oddments resemble discarded hides of butchered animals and flesh warping experiments floating like so much meaty detritus in the bloody filth of the Canis' charnel clogged sewers. So they're literally just like little like bits of skin that like animate and like looking to kind of preserve themselves. Creepiest part of them, Nexian flesh forgers quip this is entirely reasonable that they like to avoid combat, as skin skitters are little more than nervous systems wrapped in dying skin. Nexian guards who actually have to hunt these flesh forged pests aren't quite as jocular. Confronted by the oddly childlike pleas of these cornered puddles of flesh, hair, and eyes, many recruits simply choose to leave the watch. So yeah, they're just these little masses of flesh, sheets of flesh that just want to continue to eat organic matter and survive, and apparently can still speak and things like that, and are creepy as fuck, and I love them. I am a body horror enthusiast.
I'm trying to remember, didn't we run into something similar in the hotel?
It was like the flayed skin of people and they were animate and they like wrapped around you.
Yeah.
That sounds about like what this is. Exactly.
So they probably killed the entire party three times and then
yep.
I mean, their actions include, so they have a taste for skin. They can taste skin, including leather, hair, claws, and nails within 60 feet. So they can taste when their food is around, which is terrifying. And their attack is share the skin. The skin skitter scrapes and shears away large sheets of the victim's skin. This requires an athletics check, and the victim becomes clumsy as the skin skitter drapes itself in the flapping skin, granting it 10 temporary hit points for 1 minute.
Yum.
I love that kind of shit. That is my brand of Cronenbergian horror.
Yeah, no, I get it.
This campaign has been my only adventure, so I'm going to say dragons.
Okay, perfect enough.
Seagulls.
Hey, stop it now.
Stop. So the skin monster from book one of Absalom and Order were called Shred Skins.
So they seem like they might be related or similar.
Yes, the lower level version of what you're talking about.
They were level 2.
More aggressive version.
Did you find out what those were?
I'm looking. Ratlings, Night Gaunts.
Yep, that's it. Night Gaunt. Night Gaunts are faceless monstrosities who originated in the dimension of dreams and feed on creatures' emotions. They are chaotic neutral. Oh, no, I'm sorry. They weren't tickling you with their second set of arms. They have a tail. They were tickling you with their tail.
You know that's worse, right?
That's worse. You know that's worse, right?
All right. Thank you, Cass, for your always insightful questions.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right. Do we have any other questions?
We have plenty others.
Yay.
So continuing on with Patreon questions, we have a couple from Big Dog Matt. So these are more technical questions. The first one is, how long do you guys play for if your recorded sessions is about an hour?
So generally we try and do 3 to 4 episodes at a clip, and then we will cut after an hour, take a break for a second, and then come back into it. And then that way we have stuff edited so we can get it out to you on time, assuming I'm doing my job. No pressure. And that gives our editor time to get things back out to us. And then it also gives Haya time to soundscape because she does all of our soundscaping. So yeah, generally we do about 4 hours. We do 2, take a break, and then 2. And that way it feels like a regular non-recorded game session marathon. We meet every 3 weeks. So that way we hopefully can build up stuff so that if emergencies come up or holidays or things like that where we can't meet and record, we have enough backed up.
And each session's like 90 minutes that we cut down to like an hour. Or 45 minutes or whatever.
We try and chop out most of the looking up rules or Matt correcting me on rules or those times when we're like, hey, how does this work? Or how do staffs work? And how do wands work? And I subscribe to this, I don't know if this is actually a thing, but in every game system, it doesn't matter how many times you read a particular rule, there's always a rule that's a blind spot to you, no matter how many times you read and reread and look over it. And you're like, I know what this says, but it still doesn't make any sense to me. So yeah, for me in second edition, it's the way wands work and how staffs recharge. I've read it a million times. I've had it explained to me like I'm a 3-year-old. And still, every time that comes up, I'm like, hang on, I gotta go look it up and read this again.
The next question is, what microphones do you guys use to record / play?
So in the early episodes, I say the first 50, we were all on the same microphones, which were some Shure microphones. That's still what I use since we've moved to no longer being in person and doing online recordings. I think we all have all different mics. We try and have similar sounding mics.
We have what we have and we make do.
Yeah.
So Haya and I have a Shure M7s.
I'm running on a Yeti.
I have a microphone.
Did we send you a microphone?
You did not, no. Whatever Matt is using for headphones, or was at the time, I don't know if he still is, he was like, these are good. And so I bought those.
It's a Logitech Pro. It's a headset. So the wired version of the Logitech Pro X, I think is what it's called. The microphone's really good. They bought Blue, so they have like all the Blue microphone technology. For whatever reason, the wireless version of their microphones is kind of shit compared to the sound quality of the headset. The headset's excellent. Like, it's got very complex and rich sound to it, but the wireless microphone is not as good as some others, but the wired one is excellent.
And then we record everything. We have a couple of things in place. We all do a local recording on Audacity, or what is it that you use, Christine? It's not Audacity.
No, it's Audio Hijack.
Yes, Audio Hijack for Mac, because Christine and I are on Macs. For a while, we were using a Discord bot called Craig.
Fuck you, Craig.
Fuck you, Craig.
In some of the earlier episodes, Craig would, when he joined on the recording sessions, he would say, now recording, and then we'd all yell at Craig. We moved away from Craig just because there were some issues. It's a small independent developer who I still get updates from, and they're amazing, and they've worked really, really hard to make it better. But we've moved over to Riverside.fm, which, as long as I push the right button and flip the input to the right input for myself, has been very good and very reliable. It does individual recordings for each person, and it also gives us a combined recording of all of us, and it gives us a transcript if we need it. It links right into Casto, so we can literally record and send it straight there and upload it without editing. Oh, also, when we were meeting in person, we had a Tascam US 16x8 audio interface that all of our mics would go into, and then the audio interface would go to the computer. I still use that because my microphone is XLR, and I use that to go and power the mic so I can just run everything through the Tascam, and then I connect it to the computer. But yeah, honestly, since we've moved to remote recording, it's been so much easier, way less bleed between the microphones. I mean, every now and then I'll catch bleed going through an edit, but it's way better than when we were all sitting in the same room. I do miss sitting in the same room and rolling real dice, but, you know, I hope that answers all your questions.
Yeah. So if you now want to start your own podcast, there you go.
There you go. I will warn you that it is very, 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 very time consuming. And I love doing it. And I think it's amazing, but we were very blessed and lucky to speak with people who are professionals in the podcasting industry when we first started. And I think the rule was, what did he say? Like, once you have 10 episodes edited and posted, you're in it for the long haul. And clearly we've done that. But most podcasts don't get past that 10 episodes just because it's a lot more work than you think.
Yeah, which we are not great at.
So thank you for joining the Patreon. I think you're one of our newer patrons. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Big Dog Matt. So the next question comes from Germany. Stella from Germany.
Oh, guten Tag.
Yeah. She asks, if you could bring one creature or companion back to the Citadel with you, what or who would it be and why?
Let's see. That's a good question.
I mean, I remember there were the little worm, like W-Y-R-M thingies from the camp in the Mwangi Expanse that I wanted to adopt.
Oh, yes.
I don't remember what they were.
Matt, did you want to bring back the Mokula Bebe?
Yeah, it was like Denver. I think that we called him, the dinosaur.
Yeah, Denver.
That's what I was thinking of.
I think Brianna would have loved to bring Cradoli.
Yeah.
Dalos back with her so they can work together at the Forge.
If only they weren't evil aligned and sworn to the Magma Dragon.
Yeah. In a perfect world, Cradoli would have been able to come back with us.
Rob, you want all the seagulls from the dump?
I wanted a golem.
You still have it there.
Yeah, it's in the workshop.
Still have it. It's in the workshop.
You just gotta work on it.
Well, I know what I'm doing.
It's not like we don't have downtime coming up.
And who wants to bring back every person that she's met so far?
That is true.
Yes. Thousand Bones. 100%.
Thousand Bones, is that right?
We all knew that this was going to happen, so.
Yes.
And can I just say how weird and wonderful it is to know we have someone in Germany listening? That is amazing. Thank you so much for listening. It touches my cold, dead GM heart. Every time I see a little, like, another country kind of light up a little bit, it makes my heart sing. So thank you for listening. I hope you're enjoying this. And if you've gotten this far, I think that you're either just a masochist or you've enjoyed it. So hopefully it's the second.
The next question comes to us from Alex, not Alec, don't kill me, Matt, from Ohio.
Don't be a hell knight, you'll be fine.
Hi, Alex.
So they say, I'm so sad the campaign is almost over. Do you guys plan on doing anything else after this campaign? Is there something you're able to disclose now on air?
We have 2 books left. I don't feel like it's almost over.
I mean, I can see where they're coming from because I will tell you the last 2 books, they ramp really fast. So granted, combats will be a little bit longer because it is a high level of combat. That's just the nature of the game here. But I personally would love to do another AP after this. I don't think we've actually sat down and discussed it, but I would be down to run another AP after this and continue on this path of pathfinderiness. I think that we've established some lore in our game and our world, and if we were to do another adventure path, I think whatever the results of this AP would have direct effects on the next one. So if everyone survives, then clearly the names of these mythic heroes would continue on. I know another podcast is already doing it, but it's almost impossible to play an AP that's not being played at all anywhere, being recorded and presented, but I think Gatewalkers would be a very interesting follow-up to this, considering how it also deals with the Ayu Adara. definitely has ties in there. There's also, you know, at the time of this recording, they announced a new IP that looks very interesting as well. I'm also very interested in all of the new material coming out in the playtests. So I think as we actually get closer to finishing, I think we'll all sit down and have that conversation. I'm down for this. This has been the longest campaign I've been a part of, and I've enjoyed every minute of it. All right, that's a lot. I've enjoyed about 90% of it. There's that 10% where things are like just behind the scenes, like, no. I'm talking like the behind the scenes stuff that does get frustrating. And, you know, it's part of the deal here. But I would also love to continue with this group and with this story. I think it would be interesting if we had descendants of these grand heroes now trying to live up to their parents' or relatives' fame. Like, oh, my uncle Twin Talon killed a magma dragon. Great. Now I have to try and follow in his footsteps. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you also don't want to fall into the Star Wars trap of, like, every story is about the Skywalkers.
Yeah, okay. Oh, no. Yeah. That's true.
Where it's just like, okay, there are other people in the galaxy, man. Come on.
I was just thinking, though, it'd be kind of fun, though, if we just took all the character names and put them in a hat and drew randomly as to whose descendant you were.
Me.
Everyone's just a descendant of Ooh.
Would you ever consider running an evil campaign as a podcast, like Blood Lords, for instance?
I would love to do the Blood Lords AP.
Blood Lords?
Yes, like the singer. I have no issues with that. I would personally, you know, I would want us to, you know, make sure that the audience is well aware that we are playing an evil campaign, and we will be like that. Evil things would happen. I think our track record proves, you know, we are out here trying to champion good causes and good things. Our Twitch show, as you may or may not know, we donate money to charitable causes. That being said, I don't know. I haven't read Blood Lords. I've looked through Blood Lords a little bit. I flipped through it. I know, 5 years ago at this point, when we were first throwing the idea about starting a podcast, one of the concepts we had, and this was way before second edition was actually published, we were throwing and tossing around the idea of running two concurrent podcasts at the same time. I am so glad we didn't do that. But we wanted to run, what was it? Wrath of the Righteous, and what's the other one?
I thought it was Hell's Angels and Hell's Rebels.
I'm sorry, Hell's Vengeance. So yeah, we wanted to run Hell's Vengeance and Hell's Rebels back to back, basically similar stories kind of working against each other. I love that concept, and I love that idea. I don't think we could pull it off with the amount of work that it would actually take. We are a very small group and technically, you know, a small business. And the fact that if we could hire people to keep notes and edit everything for us and do all the soundscaping, we totally could do that. However, I know there are larger podcasts out there that could do the idea, and I think it's a great concept. I just don't think we could pull it off.
If it was someone's full-time job to keep track of and GM those two games, maybe. Unfortunately, we can't afford that.
I think the initial concept was that I would run one and Matt would run the other, and I would play in Matt's and Matt would play in mine, and then we would just do an episode release on like a Monday and an episode release on a Friday. But clearly that didn't happen. We've had a hard enough time with one show. But I would be interested in running an evil campaign. I've never done it, but I think it could be interesting.
I've never played in one.
Yeah.
So I think that if you've never done an evil campaign, you may be shocked by the evil that people do.
Like, we'd have to be very strict on safety. And honestly, like, we'd have to figure out why these people would even want to stick together and not fuck each other over, right?
That's one of the hardest things about, I think, about a quote, evil campaign.
Well, a lot of times if it's an adventure path, though, there's a kind of a consent that happens in the beginning as to why that would be.
Yeah, there's a conceit for the whole situation. And also, like, there's something to be said, at least for that kind of thing, like the banality of evil. There's still people with emotion. Like, you aren't driven to be a mustache twirling, you know, cartoon every second of the day. You could be evil and still have like people you care for and people that you are fond of and want to help each other out. Like, you don't always have to be backstabbing and scrabbling. You can just do terrible things together because you like these people and you like doing terrible things with them. This is a very long conversation. So again, I'm playing in another game where my character is the daughter of two like horrific villains and like trying to reconcile why they would do that. Like, they're very good, very sweet, very caring parents and terrible people, and like trying to reconcile that for her. So I put a lot of thought into this kind of thing.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I'm sorry. I was just, I don't know. I'd have a trouble playing an evil character just because as the player, I would feel real bad about doing stuff to people all the time.
That's because you're a good person.
So I don't think I can keep it up. I don't know if I could do it. I'm sorry.
And that's absolutely fair. That's why going back to the production side of the podcast, you would need buy-in from everyone who's playing and on what you're playing and why you're playing it and what your goal is. And if someone is uncomfortable or doesn't want to play in an evil campaign and you're like, well, we need you for the show, it's going to be awkward for them. And then I don't want that. They don't want that. So it would definitely be a conversation we all would need to have. Because, I mean, for me, this is, you know, an escape. And this is like my stress relief. And, you know, it's supposed to be fun. And if you're not having fun or you're uncomfortable at the table, then I'm doing something wrong. And I don't want that for my players or my audience, you know?
One of my friends was kind of said it the best way for me. But like, why do you always make the good choices in like RPGs and stuff like that? It's like, because that's also a power fantasy. I don't have to be terrible for it to be a power fantasy.
And, you know, by the time we finish this book or this AP, there will be 20 more adventure paths out there. So, you know, who knows where we'll be. But the short answer to your question, which I kind of derailed, was yes, I would love to play another adventure path. I would love to continue the show. The Stolen Fates adventure path looks really interesting to me. I love the concept of the Harrow in Pathfinder, and the Harrow deck comes into play for Stolen Fates and has its own mechanics and stuff. The Harrow, if you're not sucked into Pathfinder lore, is basically a tarot deck in game. So it's very, very interesting.
We used it for Crimson Throne.
Mm-hmm. But again, by the time we finish book 6, who knows where everything will be. So, yeah.
We'll find out. So final answer, stay tuned, Alex, not Alec, from Ohio. And thank you so much for your question. So our next question comes from Ryan from Toronto.
Oh, hey, Ryan, eh?
Please don't stop listening, please. Oh my gosh, please.
My whole family is from Canada, so I feel this kinship automatically to Toronto. Go Leafs!
Go Leafs. So their question is, hey, since it came up in a beginning banter, what would your character's last meals be? Love the show.
Well, thank you for loving the show. We're happy to have you. I think we discussed what the Hawk's last meal would be, which is the PCs coated in cheese. So that's my answer.
So for a while, I think we were also flirting with having a cooking show, and I definitely turned in Brianna's staple food, which would be fabada asturiana, which is basically a bean stew with different meats and stuff like that. So I think that would be Brianna's last meal, just a hearty bean stew that reminds her of childhood.
I think Saraya would probably go for something like simple but decadent, you know, like a really, really good wine and like some kind of like small, dainty, indulgent delicacy.
Ooh, I like that. Something where she has to like cover her head so the gods can't see her eating it.
No, she doesn't need to eat a bird.
Oh no.
Jasper would never forgive her.
Okay, seriously.
I think it would go for like just a ton of smoked meat, just pork, sausages, just hunks of steak that have been smoked, just everything smoked. There will be no starchy potatoes or tubers. There will be no vegetables included. Maybe sauce. I don't know. She might choke on all of her meat, but she will eat all of the meat. And what a way to die.
I was thinking it was just under the table while Saraya was having her meal. But
hey! I was gonna say that, and then I didn't want to be cliche.
You were all thinking it.
I honestly don't know for Twin Talon, and I've never really thought about it.
All right. Is that because he's going to live forever?
Wouldn't Twin Talons also be bean stew or whatever was fed to him as a kid in the barracks of Fort Alterain or Castle Alterain?
You mean it's not whatever Saraya's eaten?
Ayo.
No, wrong character. Oh my God. Haya. Who's Haya? Haya, who are you?
Brianna.
It's not whatever Brianna's eating?
Did you just pull a Sean?
I think she did.
What?
She just pushed Sean.
She did. Ha! I'm not alone anymore.
What is that episode where Elaine is like having a really bad time in Seinfeld and she's like, I'm turning into George! It's me! I'm turning into Sean.
Checks out.
No one wants that.
Oops. We'll take it again. You mean it's not whatever Brianna is going to be eating?
No, either way around. Whatever he decided on is what Brianna would be having.
No, that's real life. That's real life, you guys.
Brianna strikes me as a character, though, who's like, I'm not going to take no shit from no man. can't tell me what to do, but also going to be really nice about it. So I don't know that Twin Talon would choose for her. And she'd be like, yeah, no, that's totally fine. Everything's fine. It's all fine. I don't think so. I genuinely don't.
Well, it's not that he's choosing for her. It's that she's indecisive and doesn't want to choose for herself.
He would make a decision and then would just be like, oh, that looks good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Why so angry?
Why so blue, Panda Bear?
I've never felt more brushed off by a single syllable.
So, Rob.
Rob, help.
You know, the podcast we're currently recording right now.
What would Knife Sword's last meal be?
Probably some sort of perpetual stew.
Mm.
Ooh.
Not soup, stew.
Well, there is also, I mean, it's also known as forever soup. So, it's a real thing. It's not magical.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Tell me all about it.
It's just like, you know, like a soup you have on the hearth, like that never gets below the like unsafe temperature point. As it diminishes, you just kind of keep adding more to it. It's like a sourdough starter, but a soup.
Oh.
Yeah, there's like one in Thailand that's been going for 45 years.
Wow.
That's wild. I love it. I'd love to try that.
It's probably got an amazing broth by now.
Yeah, right?
Right? Like, oh, the depth of flavor in that's got to be. Mm.
Next question. Ooh, we're going international again. This is from João from Lisbon.
Wow. Hello. I'm so excited.
Hello, friend. So their question is, BG3 has become so popular, and I wanted to know, who do you think your characters would most likely associate with /B from the companions?
Gale. Soraya's Gale.
Gale. I think Ooh is definitely Karlach, let's be honest.
Like, Christine's kryptonite is a Sarian. They made a hot vampire elf. Like, check. Fuck. Soraya would definitely be Gale. Plus, then I get Tara. I get to hang out with Atressim.
Yeah.
Did the question say which character in Baldur's Gate is closest to your character, or which character would your character want to get with and go?
I think it was like spend time with, alternatively be. If it's who they're going to get with and, you know, her record is in an education, Soraya would definitely be romancing Karlach.
The question was, who would your character be / hang out with?
Yeah.
Well, I played all of an hour of it. And so probably the guy that inevitably dies in the pod.
Oh, no.
Without her friend, she's nothing. So I don't know.
Aww. But Ooh is definitely Karlach. We're agreeing.
Sure.
Yeah, that tracks.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
I think for Brianna, I'm going to cheat a little bit because I don't think any of the main companions, unless maybe we say like humor wise, she could be closer to Jahira. But I think in terms of who she would be Aelin.
I feel like she's more of an Isabel than an Aelin, though.
Really?
Aelin's just so dogmatic, and like she's an Asimar. She's like so far beyond what is actually human. So I feel like she's definitely more of like the slightly more grounded cleric Isabel.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair.
I have put way too many hours into BG3. So.
No such thing.
How about Twin Talon and Knife Sword?
I think that Twin Talon would hang out with Karlach. Because Karlach's just like a good time as far as who he would be. I guess he's technically closest to Asterion, like role wise, but maybe more like the bear dude.
Halsin.
Really? Halsin?
Well, yeah, he's all about nature and saving carts full of children or whatever.
Huh. That's true.
Honestly, Halsin would be another good for Ooh because he's all about celebrating nature's bounty.
That's true. That is true.
This guy.
Like, in a game of horny characters, he is the horniest character.
What's the name of the child thief that you meet in the very beginning? Mole, I think? That's who my NPCs would be.
Knife Sword would probably hang out with Gale and geek out about magic.
No.
As far as who he's like, I kind of feel like the warlock, because they're both kind of like trying to be good, but they're using like the tools that they use are not exactly traditionally good.
Questionable means.
Yeah, Will.
I like it.
I feel like Soraya might hang out with Asterion just so they could be snarky bitches together.
I like it. Good answers. All right, we're almost done, guys. Promise. The next one is from Tracy from Texas.
Hi, Tracy. Or should I say howdy?
Speaking of angering the mouse, what Disney characters would your characters be and why?
Sean would be Goofy or a weird amalgamation of Goofy and Donald.
Put on pants.
You know what? Trex.
I don't wanna.
I'm in my own house and I'm not a camera. Which honestly, like, yeah, fair. I feel like Zuri is, she's got like chaotic sidekick energy. But she's like not one of the princesses or anything. Definitely not. If she was, like, yeah, no, she's got psychic energy.
Ray.
The Firefly?
Yeah, or Mushu.
Disown on you, disown on your cow. No, I feel like, I'm trying to think. I don't know. I could almost see her as being Charlotte LaBeouf from Princess and the Frog, though. A little bit ditzy. Pretty much knows what's going on. Willing to do a lot for her friends.
Aw. I've definitely thought about this previously, and I've decided that Brianna is Baymax.
Yes! Aw. I am Baymax, your professional healthcare companion.
She is the healer. She doesn't know what's happening half the time. She has like a little bit of naivety to her.
Alternatively, Sarai could probably be one of the ruffians in the Snuggly Duckling Entangled.
Talon's clearly Pocahontas.
Yes.
Yes.
I mean, clearly. Have you seen his non-existent hair blowing in the wind?
When he's good with animals.
Yeah, he's good to eat animals.
Nature. And Shawanti, cut that out.
I have no idea.
Disney's not normally that smutty.
That's true.
Right?
It's true.
Well, it is. Just not in the public eye.
Was Roger Rabbit Disney or is that somebody else?
Yes. It was a joint production between Walt Disney and Warner Brothers, but you can still see Roger Rabbit at Hollywood Studios.
So then would Ooh be the lady who's not Jessica Rabbit?
What if I'm Gaston?
Oh, like the cartoon that like...
Ooh, Gaston is a good one.
That's funny because I was like, Saria also kind of has LeFou energy. Like she's got the sidekick energy.
Oh my God, yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Does that make sense? What if I am Gaston? I mean, what if Ooh is Gaston?
I think so.
You're like a wholesome Gaston.
There it is.
Yeah.
I'm a wholesome Gaston. I mean, Ooh's a wholesome Gaston. Okay. I pick that one. Pikachu, I choose you.
Rob, what is knife sword?
Gurgi.
Gurgi. Oh my gosh.
I'm confused. Say that again.
Gurgi from the Black Cauldron.
Not enthused.
I was thinking like just a miniature genie, but that's okay.
Oh, that works too.
I could also see you being a Merlin.
Yeah.
Or Madame Mim.
I just want to see Knife Sword do the Merlin dance.
Does it have to be a fully animated movie?
I don't think, no. It's just a Disney movie.
Bedknobs and Broomsticks?
Oh, so good.
The guy that owns the School of Magic?
Yeah, but he doesn't actually, though, and he doesn't... Or are you talking about the one he's actually getting the books from?
Yeah, the guy who's selling the pages out to everybody.
Well, he's like a con man, though. He's not actually a wizard.
I guess you don't see Knife Sword's character sheet. Never mind.
Fair enough.
Spoilers.
Knife Sword just singing Portobello Road.
Yes.
I got some hard deception on there.
Oof.
Yes, but you actually do cast spells unless that's how high your deception is.
Yeah, exactly.
Trick magic item is just Knife Sword's bread and butter.
Oof.
The world may never know.
I've convinced endless monsters that the gravity doesn't work right.
I think that's it.
Okay. Well, thanks everybody for your questions. That was really fun.
Yeah.
Well, thank you everyone for all the questions. And as always, the links are in the bottom of our episodes. So if you have questions, please fill out the form. One last thing before we head off today. I just want to say real quick, you know, I hope we are enjoyable and fun and can make you laugh or have some sort of connection to our show. That being said, everyone, please, please, please take care of your mental health. Mental health is super important and is not taken as seriously here in the States and is not very well prioritized at all. And I'll be honest with everyone listening and my cast here, I recently went through a really, really bad bit of mental health. I'm just encouraging everyone to check in on your friends and check in on your family if you know or if you think they are struggling with mental health. We love you. We are always here for you as a cast, as people. And if you're here in the States and you're in mental crisis, please dial 988. It will connect you to a crisis health and they will help you through things. We love you and I can't wait to see you all. I don't want to end on a down note, but I just want to let everyone know how valuable they are and how much they are loved, and we appreciate you being a part of our community. And with that, we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye!
Bye!
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 Oh, hey, I didn't get to ask. Is Dahak lore ever going to be, like, handy in these next two books?
Maybe.
Thank you for listening to the Crack Die Podcast. Please visit us at crackdie.com. Pathfinder 2nd Edition and the Age of Ashes Adventure Path are property of Paizo. Background audio was provided by Sirenscape because epic games deserve epic music. Please visit them at sirenscape.com. Additional background music was provided by Epidemic Sound. Please visit them at epidemicsound.com. The Cracked Eye podcast theme was composed by Angelo DiLoreto. He is forever missed. This episode was edited by Nathan. Please visit them on Twitter at @editingnate. Finally, thank you to all our patrons for assisting us in breathing life into this production. We do not know where we'd be without them. Our esteemed patrons are Cassandra Connors, Doombeard, Finder of Path and Stars, Jacob Wilhelmi, Anwar Musa, Big Dog Matt, Jason Leach, Margaret Torello, Mike Minatillo, Sean Moore, Thomas Beard, Chris Simmons, Michael A. Hill, Corey Fellers, D. Shaka Jamal, Lee Jackson. If you'd like to join our Patreon, please visit patreon.com/crackdiepodcast.